Very good. So, it's as Drew was saying last week, I was happily in my cave over in Monastery in Serpentine, just relaxing, having a holiday. The problem is, whenever there is your holidays, in other words, Christmas, Easter, New Year's, whatever, that's the time that people like me have to work the hardest. Because you're all nice and free and think, oh, what should we do today? Let's go and bother Ajahn Brahm. Whatever. I'm very happy to do that. But just like any other human being, sometimes you get tired, you get exhausted. And it's also the case that I have to, the word is, be authentic. I've got to practice what I preach. You can't do one thing and sort of and say another thing. So when I tell other people just to let go, to relax, be peaceful, so I decided to do the same myself. So after the New Year, celebrations and stuff like that, just spent 10 days just chilling out. I think that's why the weather was so cool this time of the year. I was chilling out, and I was also getting the weather to be nice and cool as well. That's the answer to global warming, having more people chilling out in this world. And the cool from other people can even assist, maybe influence. There can't be many sort of cool people over in Sydney. It'd be really hot over there. But anyway, chilling out over here. And it's a really important lesson for everybody that, you know, there comes a time when you are tired, that when you are even sick, when you realize the best medicine is just to go to a nice place and just do nothing for a few days. Why can't we not learn the art, the skill, the therapeutic benefit of actually doing nothing? Because too many times, well, people have probably told you, asked you, the holidays, where are you going for your holidays? And you say, I'm going nowhere. And then they say, you're a loser. And when anyone calls me a loser, I say, yes, that's me. So why do you always have to be going somewhere in this world? Where are you going to anyway? Are you getting on in your life? Where are you getting to? And after a while, when you sort of get a little bit, I say, I spent all this time trying to get somewhere. And, you know, it's not exactly what it promised it would be. I thought that, oh, and this is my life. I don't know what you think you wanted to do, just to work really hard, become rich, and once you're rich, you can retire. Ha, 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 ha. Well, you still have to keep on working. Okay, so be poor. Be poor and retire. Ha, 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 ha. You still have to keep on working. It's really strange. Look, somebody really understood. He's got a nice little, very wise person over there. He laughs at all my jokes. You're very, very smart. I told you. I'm going to ordain you after this. You've got great promise. But isn't it great with children? They can just be. And it's, I don't know what happens in our life, that sometimes with going to school and just having to meet other people's expectations and requirements, oh, just have all these wonderful little stories. This is one of my favorite stories about just why do people strive so hard? Because this particular person, this was an old story in Thailand. This particular monk, the monks know this story, that he was grade one at school. And grade one at school, a whole year going to grade one at school. At the end of the grade one, he failed. He couldn't pass. To this day, I was never explained how you can fail grade one, whether it was stick drawings were not good enough, or crayon was, or plasticine, that's what I used to do when I was a kid. But how can you fail grade one? But this kid failed grade one, had to repeat grade one at school. And you know what happened? That actually grade one is a really interesting time because you know that as a monk sometimes you get involved in all these little interesting stuff. They asked me years and years ago to please go and give a talk at one of the schools. I think it was actually Rolling Stone Primary a long time ago. And, of course, I accepted, let's just go and see what happens. But I was expecting, you know, at least, you know, grade sixes and sevens or something. But they put me in a whole group of grade ones and grade twos to teach them Buddhism and meditation. I thought, I'd never done that before. So how can you teach a grade one children some really deep understanding of the nature of life? I always like challenges like that. So what I did, the reason I'm telling the story, because it actually worked. If it didn't work, I wouldn't tell the story. I'd hide it and just never mention it again. But this particular time, just had about 60 kids there in the double class, grade one and grade two. So, okay, how many of you, put your hand up, how many of you don't like rice pudding? That was my question. How many of you don't like rice pudding? Now, these are, you know, 5, 6-year-olds, grade ones. A couple of kids put their hand up. They didn't like rice pudding. And the other kids looked around and saw what was going on. They put their hand up too. And a few others put their hand up. And once, in about 1 minute, the whole class had their hand up. Two classes, 60 kids, they all agreed they didn't like rice pudding. Great. Put your hands down. Now, please put your hands up if you've ever eaten rice pudding. And only about 5 or 6 people put their hands up. And that's how you teach Buddhism. They got it, even 5 or 6-year-old kids. We follow what other people do, don't we? What we like, what you should be doing. Where did you go over Christmas, over your holidays? What did you eat? What are you doing with your life? You know, what you're supposed to do, you just follow what other people do. Yeah, and a couple of kids ate rice pudding, they didn't like it, fair enough. But then everyone's, oh, we don't like rice pudding either. So this is our likes and dislikes, our preferences, which change a lot of actually how we live our life. Instead of actually being a little bit rebellious, finding out for yourself, being aware, finding out, not if you like rice, try rice pudding. Now recently we're doing a fundraiser for our monastery I'm involved in so many different monasteries. I get sort of hijacked, it's called franchising. So over in, this is in Melbourne, and over there, I didn't ever do that to the cookbook. Somebody was actually doing a cookbook. I saw her earlier on today. Where's Abby? I don't know what happened to her. I saw her earlier on, but oh, there she is. What happened to my cookbook? It's still coming. He's still cooking it. Hasn't come out of the oven yet. But then, so they wanted me to do an introduction. So I did, if you're doing an introduction to a cookbook, you put some recipes, your favorite recipe. So my two recipes I put in the cookbook. It was the first one was an old recipe which I used to eat when I was over in Thailand, in the northeast of Thailand. It's very, it was over 40 years ago. This was really just basic, no income at all. It just basically just self-sufficient, whatever you can eat was all you could do. It's such a poor part of the world. So one of the favorite dishes, I only eat one meal a day, was frog on rice. So, you know, you get a sticky board of rice, you know, glutinous rice, and then you put a frog on top. Not just boiled, no salt, no chili, no garlic, no seasoning, just boiled frog on rice. And that was what I grew up on in Thailand as a young monk. I used to be very thin. Now I'm making up for it, you know, it's just balancing my karma of what I did in the past. So that was the first recipe, boiled frog on rice. And if people didn't like that, just a more modern recipe, because if you ever go down to Bodhinyana Monastery or to Gijiganup, the nuns' monastery, or even come here on the weekend, you see we eat out of a bowl. And everything goes in the bowl. And sometimes, you know, just, you know, it doesn't actually, there's no compartments. Now people say, I've only got compartments in the bowl, like, you know, over here if this is for your rice or your potatoes, and over there for your curries or and over the sweet and whatever. No, it just goes all over the place. You try to separate it, but sometimes it just doesn't work. Especially for me, because being a senior monk, if you ever go down to the monastery, we get the food downstairs, we take it upstairs where we eat, and sometimes it's always somebody else's job to carry my bowl up for me. And sometimes they're not that sort of very steady on their feet. It goes this way and that way as they're taking upstairs. And by the time, it was actually all nice and separated when I gave it to them. But now it's all over the place. So my other recipe was in that cookbook in the foreword, was spaghetti bolognese with strawberry ice cream on top. Now, why did you say the? You're just like those year one kids, aren't you? Grade one kids. You know, don't you like spaghetti with strawberry ice cream on top? That's teaching. Even the kids understood this one. How many of you ever had spaghetti with strawberry ice cream? You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're missing. I've had it. I know what I'm talking about. It's disgusting. But you can't say that. You've never done it. Anyway, that was in the cookbook. And when I said to it, to serve it, serve it to your enemies, and your enemies will go a long way from you. I remember I almost killed myself doing that, because as soon as I wrote it, I was reading it out to Ajahn Brahmani, and I was laughing so much I almost choked to death. He was really concerned about me, because you know, I think that's the way I'm going to go one day, laughing myself to death, choking on my own jokes. That's why I tell them, I don't care if you laugh, I like telling them. So anyway, where was I? Back to teaching year ones, and just learning just this wonderful technique of just standing back and just seeing a bigger picture, not throwing what other people do, just because it's a holiday, you don't have to go here and go there and do stuff. Can't we actually just follow some example, just relax and just to be for an hour or two or something? So that's what I was doing for the last about 10 days. Just relaxing, catching up a bit of sleep, doing a little bit of reading a couple of books, which I had there for a long time and just hadn't got around to reading. Just relaxing, doing nothing. So people say, what did you do? Can't remember, not much. That's a good monk. But didn't you actually do lots of really deep meditation? Nah, been there, done that. Didn't you? Because that's not what deep meditation really is. Because otherwise, people actually go on these retreats, you know, and what they do is they strive. Okay, they've got their goals. This retreat, I'm going to get this many hours, that many hours. See if I can increase my personal best, my PB. It's just more stress. That is not what this is all about. It's learning how to relax and let things be. Because when you relax and let things be, number one, your health just really gets really strong. We wear out because of stress. So many stress-related diseases, and you can feel that. You feel that in your body, just you know, things are just beginning to pull a bit too far, and you can feel it almost about to break. You get tired, you get aches and pains, you're not really fit and bubbly anymore because your body gets exhausted. And that's a huge problem in today's world, just exhaustion. Fortunately, I practice, you know what any of you come on any retreats, you know what I do, I say, well, for the first few days, sleep. Sleep, catch up. I know people think, wow, you mean I can just go to a place and just sleep? I don't have to do anything? I don't have to get up and do some chanting or do some chores. I don't have to. Yeah, you can have to eat, but people don't mind doing that. But just to be able to sleep for a few days. And of course, this is one of I've noticed this, you know, in myself, in even the monks, even in our committee, and everybody else who really works very hard. You know, sometimes it does need just to take a relax and rest. Your whole attitude changes once you've relaxed, because tiredness is one of the biggest problems in our modern world. First came up, just an old anecdote, because I just came back from Kuala Lumpur and Penang and Kuala Lumpur, just over the Christmas New Year. And they some, I forget who the organizers were, but they had a big youth seminar. And this huge number of youth were asked, what is your most troubling emotion? Is it, you know, like idea of like just who you are, you know, your self-view, peer pressure, whatever, trouble with your parents, trouble with, you know, trying to find partners in life, whatever. This was 15 to 25-year-olds, schoolwork. What's the biggest emotional problem in your life? And the top of the list, by far, clear winner, tiredness. And this was 15 to 25-year-olds in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. If you did the same survey here in Australia, you'd find the same. Even at 15 to 25, we are already exhausted. We just learn to cope, to push through without any rest. No wonder we have a lot of emotional health and also psychological problems. Some people can't take it. Some have got resilience, natural, but some just can't. And this is one of the problems. And you know that yourself, that when you're really tired, you get grumpy, upset, and it's also, you get very sick if you don't do something about it. So that's one of the great ways of learning how to relax, is actually to learn how to sleep. But even people can't even sleep these days. Even they've got a, you know, a few hours rest. Why? Because they worry so much. And they worry, they look, how many of you, when you go to bed, sleep with your shoes on? Or your slippers, or your high heels, or whatever? It's dumb, isn't it? But many people actually do that metaphorically. So I've often taught, to have a good night's sleep, your two shoes, your left and right shoe, and then the left one, regard that as your past. All the things which have happened to you earlier today, or the last week, the last year, whatever it is, look at that as the past. Even if you get a pair of shoes, you can actually write on it, P-A-S-T, past. And then, sort of, that is taken off before you get into bed. Tucked underneath there. It'll be there for you in the morning, but you don't take that into bed with you. That's disgusting, that's dirty. Same as the right foot, that's your future. Your right shoe, rather, or slipper. That's your future. Whatever it is going to happen to you tomorrow, whatever you have to do, whatever problem, difficulty, duty you have in the morning, leave that alone. Take it off, don't take it into bed with you. So just having a little bit of a metaphor, a little training, something, you know, physical, so you always remember to take off the past and the future. Somebody else should actually do that. Get some shoes and just put on it, past, future, left, right, you know, on the shoes, and you know, make them a Christmas present or late New Year's present or Chinese New Year, any old present, birthday present for a person, so they can always remember just when they get their little slippers on, always take them off before you go actually into bed. Take off the past and the future, and don't sleep with your past and future on. Otherwise, of course, you'll be worried. You'll never, ever get a good night's sleep. And of course, because you don't get a good night's sleep, insomnia, worry, no rest, people have to take drugs or alcohol to try and rest at night. That's no way to live. So instead, we learn how to relax. We learn how to sleep well. And especially when you have a chance, as long as you really need. And so I caught up on my sleep a couple of days and you felt really good. You felt back to full energy. Look, if you have an iPhone, you can't keep using it all the time. You have to charge it up again. If you don't charge it up, of course it doesn't work anymore. And don't put fuel in your car, it's going to run out. If you don't, you know, you can't do like that. Nan, it's a long time ago, I heard this story. She was actually, I forget where she was, but, you know, she ran out of fuel in the middle of, you know, hardly anywhere. But there was a gas station about a mile up the road. But, you know, she didn't have anything to carry the fuel in. And she was one of these, what's it called, like Silver Chain nurses. So the only thing which she had, you know, was one of the, like the bedpans. Well, that's something, which didn't leak. you know, the things are not the actual the bedpan, but the urine goes in. What do they call those things? They're bedpans. What? Yeah, little bottle. Okay, so the urine bottle, you know, for the patients. That's all she had. So she, you know, went over to the gas station because she was a nun. She explained things, okay, just a little bit of petrol just so she can get her car going, get properly filled up. And so she got back to her car by the side of the road, opened up the cap and started pouring the contents of the bedpan into the fuel tank. And somebody sort of stopped and said, "Well, I'm not religious, but I certainly admire your faith." Anyway, an old story. Anyway, back to, where was I? I forget now. Anyway, just learning how to to relax and have a bit of peace and fun in life. So you learn how just to let things be. And in order to, number one, relax, but also you find as you just step back from life and you don't get so tired, as you start to, you know, see what's going on in life. The old story, it's an old story, this is not a joke story, this is a powerful story. That old story of when I was, just turned 18, United States, get bored, just the same as other countries at that time, a bit more intense maybe, but I always liked the idea of jungles. Jungles was always really fascinating me because it's totally different than where I grew up in London. And just to go to these rainforests and see like indigenous people. To this day I can actually visualize, you know, just going along this river which separated Guatemala and Belize, and just, you know, there's obviously no police anywhere, but just going on a boat up in this jungle, it was just like out of like Tarzan movie or something. And just expected, these days probably Indiana Jones going through the bush or something, but anyway, it was just really, really ancient stuff. And seeing like a dugout canoe with naked indigenous people. Do you know, to this day, you know, the thing stopped, the little fishing boat stopped halfway up the river, and they were serving like corn tortilla and black beans and really strong sweet coffee. You know, lots of sugar in it. And that's the only thing on the menu. And dogs running around all over the place, very unhygienic, would never ever pass the City of Stirling health regulations. This was in the middle of the jungle 45 years ago. But it was so delicious and nutritious. You know, you had a corn tortilla just all smoky and the black beans and a good cup of coffee afterwards. Oh, you could fight the world. Now I know Tarzan's secret. That's where you could swing through the jungle all day. It was on that coffee. I almost felt like swinging through the jungle after that. But anyway, eventually, the reason I was in the jungle was going up to these great monuments in the middle of the jungle, the pyramids at Tikal. Huge monuments. And I didn't know what they were there for. I was totally uninformed. You know, that's one of the greatest things, you know, not to have too much knowledge, because sometimes when we have too much learning, it stands in the way of truth. Instead of asking other people what it means, we just don't have the courage just actually to stand back and find out for ourselves, what is this? What's going on? With a beautiful, clear mind of no knowledge, it's amazing just what you can see. So what happened was, climbing up these big pyramids, why do you climb up these really tall, a long way up? And I, to this day, I say it's a boy thing. I don't know why. You see something, you've got to climb up it. You've got to conquer it. Whatever, stupid thing to do. But anyway, climbed up it, and at the top, didn't know what to expect, but there's this little, like, almost like a cabin on the top, a small little room, like a cupboard on the top. But that wasn't the main thing, because at the top, you could see over the jungle. You were above the jungle. Number one, instead of how we'll have this sticky, mosquito-thick air, you know, in the jungle, at the top, the wind would come across because there was no trees. You were above the tree line. So the air was just so cooling. And number two, you could look down. This was the days before Google Maps. It's like your own Google Map, real. You could actually see everything. you could actually see where you fat into the scheme of things. By leaving your world, leaving all this rushing and going and struggling, and just going up, away, out. Not what other people are doing, but just relaxing. And then you've got this amazing view. And you could see the jungle. You know, because jungles are very thick, it takes days to get anywhere. So, you know, the last couple of days' journey, you could actually see it. You know, maybe only 30, 40 kilometers, but, you know, you could actually see where you'd come from. And you could actually get this whole idea of where everything fat in. You know, you could see this beautiful town of Flores, it was called. Obviously, it means flower in Spanish. And that was where I spent the night before. It's a little beautiful island in the middle of this lake, in the middle of the jungles. Gorgeous little place. But anyway, also, the other thing, the spiritual side of it, it's not just seeing where you fit in. It was this wonderful simile of being able to get up there, clear, restful, beautiful air for the first time, and you could see an infinity in all directions. Whichever way you looked, you could see forever with nothing between you and infinity. I love that metaphor, because so often we keep putting things between us and deep meaning. Always trying to find out what the book says, what the spiritual master says, what the whoever it is says. Instead of our job is actually to clean off away those obstructions, take away the hindrances, take away all those obstacles so you could see for yourself what's up there, who you are and how you fit into the great scheme of things. And you find out, you belong. You know the other thing you found out? There's nothing wrong with you. You mean there's nothing wrong with me? That's really, because all the time people are always telling you to, you're not good enough. You know, you should lose weight, Ajahn Brahm. No way. Wouldn't be the same Ajahn Brahm, not as cuddly, not as much of me. Oh, you should, what else should I do? I don't know, you should keep your robe on properly. Yeah, I know that one. All these other things, but sometimes instead of keeping on improving, that causes a stress. That is what causes us tired. Yeah, there's a time to improve. There's a time to read up a bit, relax, do some more meditation, find out what this is supposed to do, what that's supposed to do, improve yourself, do some building, tidy up your heart, brush your teeth, all those sorts of things. Yeah, but there is a time when we learn how to relax. And when we learn how to relax, take a bit of time off, that's like climbing a pyramid. That just makes so much sense of stuff. And when was the last time you just really relaxed? You had some time off, just even an hour by yourself, just really chilled. So, you know, you just got out of the jungle, the tangle of, you know, life, and just get up a bit and just see the infinite in all directions, nice and cool and chilling out and peaceful. And then, you know, you see how things all work out together. And then, of course, you come back compassionate to everybody and compassionate to yourself because you've got resilient now. You've got your energy back up. You've got perspective back up. So whatever you need to do in life, yeah, you can just do it with a bit of fun and games. And that's the other thing that people are so serious in life. Why are so people so serious? That's why. Oh, I was just telling in Penang about because I don't know why. I've got this reputation of like ghost stories. I don't know if I told this the last time 2 weeks ago, but anyway, they asked me just, can you please tell like some sort of ghost story? And so that was when I told them over in Penang, some of them already heard it before, about one of the weirdest, scariest ghost stories ever. And that was the coffin ghost. This was a fellow over there. He was just came to listen to a talk one evening. And on the way back to his home, actually I think this was in UK, that's where most of the ghosts are. I don't know why they go to ghosts, because they're usually cold anyway, so they're like cold countries. Anyway, this guy came to the talk one evening, and actually to get back to his house, there was two ways. You can go the long way round, but you can take the shortcut. across the cemetery. Now, of course, you know, what would you do if that was you? Go through the cemetery? There's no such things as ghosts, it's just all superstition. That's what this fellow thought. So he decided to take the shortcut through the cemetery. And even if you don't believe in ghosts, that's what people say. But when you hear a few sounds behind you, you just wonder, what was that? He got halfway across. Perfect, peaceful, no problem at all. But just a little past halfway, that's when he started to hearing this sound. At least he thought he did, that something was following him. Have you ever had that feeling that someone is following you? That's what he had. And so his senses went even more alert as he started listening really, really carefully. And he thought it was actually not imagination, that something was following him. Bump, 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 behind him. And he said, no, come on, just my mind is playing tricks on him. But even so, he started walking a bit faster. And whatever it was, bump, 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 was also walking faster. And so he started running. And whatever it was behind him, bump, 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 also increased. And then he made the biggest mistake of his life. He decided to turn around and see if there was something following him. And what he saw would make many of you have a heart attack. What he saw was just unbelievable, supernatural. Never seen anything like that in his life before. It was a coffin, a vertical coffin, with the soil and the cobwebs still attached to it. Bump, 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 following him, chasing him. He was being chased by a coffin from the cemetery. He fled. He ran as fast as he possibly could. And bump, 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 the coffin kept following him. Fortunately, his house was just, you know, the other side of the cemetery. Rushed as fast as he could, had his like gate, the garden gate. He didn't open the gate, he jumped right over it. Bump, 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 bump. And of course, you know, the coffin couldn't jump that high. Bump! Bump! As the coffin started to break down the garden gate. You know, if supernatural things have a lot of force behind them, they're just amazing. They don't belong to this real world, and just some of the energy they have is just unbelievable. Fortunately, he got to the front door of his house, as the coffin was still banging at the front gate, trying to get through, and he reached for his keys to open up the front, and as soon as he reached for his keys, bump! Yeah. And the coffin broke through the garden gate. Bump, bump, he's coming after him along the gate. And so he just desperate, he picked up the first key on the key ring, put it in the lock. So lucky it was the right one. Turned the lock, opened the gate, went inside, slammed the door just as the coffin came to the front door of the house. You know, you could see it through the little glass pane in the front door of the house, the coffin on the other side. He was panting, his heart was palpitating, sweat pouring down from him. But he'd made it, he was inside the house, safe. Bump! As the coffin started to break down the door of his house. Bump! The wood started to give way, started to spin. Bump! The hinges started to shatter, to splinter. Bump! There's only one thing he could do. He ran up the stairs. There's only one room in the house which had a lock on it, the bathroom. And as he got to the top of the stairs, bump! And the coffin had broken through the front door of the house. And the coffin looked around, bump, 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 and he saw him at the top of the stairs, bump, bump, bump. As the coffin started bumping, bumping his way up the staircase. And so he just ran into the... ran into the bathroom and locked the door, hoping he could escape. Of course, bump! As the coffin started to break down the bathroom door, And if he knew he was done for, because look, if that coffin was strong enough to actually to bust through the front door of your house, which is the strongest door in the whole house, the bathroom door, that would soon give way. And of course it started to give way. Bump, bump, one more bump. And the bathroom door had busted right through, and there's no other place to run. There he was, he spread-eagled against the back wall of the bathroom as the coffin bump started coming towards him. Instinctively, not knowing really what to do, he picked up the first bottle on the shelf and threw it at the coffin. And all this, the bottle actually broke, shattered, and all this brown liquid just went over the coffin. And it stopped. It never moved again. Because what he didn't realize, his good fortune, what he actually threw at the coffin was called cough mixture. It stops the coffin. That's what it says. Ask any pharmacist. Stops the coffin. Someone's already going out. I'm sorry, it wasn't that bad a story. Anyway. Anyway, enough of the supernatural. But just learning how just to relax and be at peace. A bit more fun in life, a bit more joy, a bit more happiness, which is really important part of our spiritual life. But it also is see the bigger picture. It's not just a big deal. And a lot of times, if we do have more happiness, it's much better for our health. Good old Patch Adams, making people laugh, increases their health. Number two, when it's very serious, we usually get very afraid as well. And it's a fear, which is also the thing which kills us very often. The fear which makes us things go wrong. The fear of making a mistake. The fear of failure is why we keep on failing. If you don't be afraid of failure, failure's really good. I've been trying to fail for so many years. Telling these really stupid jokes again and again and again, hoping that one day someone will complain, so we'll be banned from coming to Nolamar and Dhamma, and that can actually have a retreat all the time. Just relax. But you find out that when you're not afraid, it's amazing just how successful life becomes. When you don't want things, whatever you need comes to you. So the other thing which is very strange, everything which I ever thought to get in life, whatever I wanted, would always never come. Or something which was no second rate, not which I really appreciated. But then when I stopped all this wanting and craving and desire and I don't know where that came from. It's all just imposed upon me from outside. All these ideas of just, you know, rice pudding not being good enough. Strawberry ice cream on spaghetti is not nice. All these ideas which people have about what you need in life, what you need to be happy, to be healthy, to be content. We know what life is all about. What you have to be, what you need to have in another person, have a beautiful relationship with another person. If you can't have a beautiful relationship with yourself, of course, how can you have a beautiful relationship with another person? Get it right with yourself, first of all. Beautiful kindness, acceptance. Not perfect, but good enough. Good enough so you can tell old jokes like the coffin story. I was very pleased that you laughed at it, but I didn't mind if you just groaned at it. I would just still tell it every time because I really enjoy telling stories like that. Because I have fun telling it. Have you ever noticed, if you have fun with what you do, other people get up on the energy as well. They also enjoy it. They have fun too. So it's learning how to love yourself. I don't mean just think you're the best, not narcissism like sort of Mr. You-Know-Who, T-R-U-M-P. But you know, when you're just at peace with yourself. You're happy in your own skin because you're relaxed, you've rested, and you're happy. How much is that worth? 2 weeks of winning the lotto. Happiness, energy, sort of, vision, if you like. Now, what is vision anyway? How can you really have a vision when you're just following what other people do? Blind leading the blind. Oh, just one of our monks years and years ago, he came from Mundijong, just down the road from our monastery. And he told this story that, you know, his father was a sheep farmer, sheep and cows, but anyway, at that time mostly sheep. And he went out just to have a look, and there was this big thicket of bushes on the property. He doesn't know how this happened, but the sheep had formed a circle around the thicket of bushes. So they couldn't see the other side of the circle because the bushes were in the way. But they were following each other, going round and round and round on a circle without end. He didn't know how many hours they'd been doing this, because that's what sheep do. You follow the one in front. And when it's a circle, you go round and round and round and round, following one another. And he thought, that's just like life, isn't it? Round and round and round we go, following what other people are doing. Fortunately, you could actually take one of those sheep and pull it out. That's like, you know, a good spiritual teacher putting one, but oh, it's another way of doing things. You don't always have to do what other people do. Don't allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. Because every now and again you just go up that pyramid, it's a really tall tree, and you see, well, what it's all about. What you're about, how you fit in. It's not so easy to fit in. Just learning how to be yourself, who you are. And be at peace in your own skin. Not trying to get somewhere or be something different. That's one of the great things, all these great teachers I used to see. You know, a lot of them were a bit eccentric. They're not sort of your... There's a couple who were, you know, like your idea of what an enlightened being was. But a lot of them were just, you would never know. Just only little people, just their own little characteristics. Never knowing who is the one who's at peace with themselves. So you don't need to change or be different. To change your attitude, change the way you look at life. Don't need to change your partner. Don't need to change your job. Don't need to change anything except the way you look. And learn how to make peace, be kind, be gentle with whatever you face in life. That's why when people said that during the meditation, beautiful little things of how we can meditate. Sometimes people say, oh, I can't meditate. Oh, I'm really tired, I'm sick, I'm dying, I've just got too many aches and pains. I say, can you make peace with this moment? Can you be kind? You know, we can always be kind. You can always make peace. You can always be gentle with yourself, with others, with life. You know, for many years, you know, we've been trying to stop people's mobile phones going off. It's impossible. You try and do that, so no, we make peace. Make a joke about it. We're kind. We're gentle. That's much better. For years we've been trying to make sure that kids don't make any noise when we're meditating. Can we do that? Of course not. So we make peace with the kids running around outside. Thank you. We're kind, we're gentle. Now see, that attitude there, that's something which is very special. It's called authenticity. As you treat others, then you treat yourself. Learn how to make peace with yourself. With all the silly things which you do. You know all of those, because it's all on video these days. All my idiosyncrasies. Learn to make peace, be kind. And be gentle. That's something you can always do. And that changes the whole ball game. And it's amazing, just everything which you need happens. Good health, lots of friends, a very, very wonderful Buddhist society. So many people come and listen and from all over the world. It's amazing. Why? Because it works. Thank you for listening. Because I see that coming up now. And I have to make peace and be kind and be gentle with this little machine. Which is now going to have some questions from overseas or underseas or overseas. Okay, none from Mars this week. Okay, never mind. from Tyrrell, how can one overcome the fear of letting go into deep meditation? Can one come out of deep meditation easily if one is meditating alone? I heard alarms can't be heard. Yes, but you will find that just the amount of letting go, you go into deep meditation, that's how you come out. What happens in deep meditation is that you go into the realm of the mind, so the five senses turn off, you're perfectly safe, but the fear, if you have the fear, you don't go in. But what really happens after a while, that fear is overcome by a little bit of confidence coming from a monk like me. Been there, done that, so I've got a good reputation. So it means that people trust, and I know what I'm talking about. So it means they don't have the fear, they just let it happen and have a great time. And the other thing, of course, the thing which really overcomes fear, why do people actually jump out of a plane, skydiving? Why do you do that for? Oh, bungee jumping or other sort of extreme sports. What do people do that for? Because it's fun. You get joy out of it. And it's precisely the same, the joy and the fun out of meditation, the happiness. That is what overcomes the fear. It's just so much fun meditating. You don't feel afraid. That's how I overcome any fear of public speaking. So much fun telling stupid jokes. So you don't get afraid telling them. Anyway, from Japan, is becoming a monk or a nun the best way to practice Buddhism? If it isn't, why do you become a monk? Oh, just for an easy life. I don't know if I told this somewhere recently about why Ajahn Chah became a monk, my teacher. This is his 100th birth anniversary next June. But anyway, Ajahn Chah, I remember him telling me this. He said that when he was a kid in the villages, you know, they used to play games, didn't have any mobile phones or even TVs, electricity, so they, you know, kids in those days made up their own games. And one of his favorite games was not like playing house, was playing monk. And one of the little kids would always volunteer to be the monk, and that was always Ajahn Chah. You know, even from a very young age, he liked being a monk and volunteering, so he'd get a bit of brown cloth from his parents or somewhere, wrap it around him, and he would sit on a rock somewhere, telling all his friends what to do, and then his friends would go to their houses and get him nice things to eat. And ever since then, he thought, wow, being a monk is a really good life. It's not quite as easy as that, but anyway. Of course, you know, why not sort of become a monk or a nun to practice Buddhism? Because number one, it means you really are authentic, you're living the life, you know. But if you are a monk or a nun, at least be a good monk or a nun. So you don't live a life as a monk or a nun just for fame or whatever. You do that just for great service. You know, if you're a doctor, you know, you wear white coats in the hospital. At least I know who the doctors are, who the nurses are. You know, so policemen, they have to wear their uniforms, a fire brigade wear their uniforms. So this is like a monk, spiritual uniform, so at least you know who the monks are. Anyway, in the West, we are made to feel guilty for letting go. Not here. This is the West. I don't know what part of the West you're in. This is the real West here. We call this Western Paradise, West Australia. And made to feel guilty for letting go. No, because you can do much more once you've let go. It's this whole idea of like what we call like productivity. I've got an article, it's in my bag there somewhere, but it was from the ABC website, or BBC, one of the two, but anyway, on that website there was talking about, I think John Ford, you know, Ford Motor Company was the first person to actually to cut down the number of hours you work to an 8-hour week. And before then, you know, 10 hours, 12 hours, 15-hour week, working week, this was in most Western civilization. He cut it down to 8 hours and found that an 8-hour day, so an 8-hour day, that actually got more cars come off the production line. Kind of intuitive, but it actually worked. You didn't work so long, you weren't so tired, you get actually more work done. And that is just such an obvious thing, which I don't know why people keep pushing you to work harder, work longer, and you found actually you get less work done. So 8 hours, they've got more cars come. Actually, this is evidence-based, clear. And it's the same with others. You push people too hard, and then you just don't get so much work done. So it's an interesting little concept there. So feel guilty for letting go. You should feel guilty for not letting go. You're just becoming part of the problem. If you don't know how to let go and relax a bit more, then of course you're going to have sort of increase the health budget, you know, of the whatever country or state you're in. It's amazing just how much money you have to spend on just health insurance, or just the medical expenses of any state always go up, 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 up. But when you let go, you don't actually get so sick. So actually you don't spend so much money. So it's actually very good for the budget. This place here should be subsidized by the Health Department of Australia. We are saving this government a lot of money just by learning how to meditate, relax a little bit more. Because it does actually work. So you should feel guilty for not letting go. Otherwise, just more of the problem. So one of the problems is that we should learn how to let go much more. If you let go much more, actually live a much happier, longer, healthier life. Why are you carrying around so much? So anyway, to let go more, go for it. Authentic, teach by example, let go as much as possible. So now, I'm not going to feel guilty at all for letting you go. Bye-bye. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's three big sadhus, which mean awesome in Pali. So I should have actually said, any questions from the audience? Very good. No, thank you very much. Good night. So if anyone has any questions, you come up and ask. We've got three monks here, the three wise men. If you want to see the three wise women up at Gijigadam, they're here as well. Okay, so have a good night. See you in the morning. Anyone wants to? Is that what I'm supposed to say? Oh, Buddha, yeah, it's got to get in big trouble, haven't I? See, letting go, won't we let me let go? I'll get in big trouble. Okay, just pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, sorry. I actually forgot. Okay, imperfect monk. Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhemi suvākkhato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi suppatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sango Sankang Namami. Very good. And if anybody is going to the western suburbs, I do recommend the shortcut through Karakata Cemetery.
Bub, bub, bub.